Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
First question are from parents who want to have their home destroyed. My husband and I are planning a trip for our 20th wedding anniversary. We will be gone for a week. We're considering leaving our 16-year-old son at home alone. The younger kids are staying with my parents. Are we mad for doing this? We are trying to teach him about responsibility, and also he kicked up a right fuss when we asked him to stay with his grandparents. We will set rules, and I considered asking my sister to call in on him to check the house is still standing. Is 16 too young to be left on his own? We were nervous, but this could be a good step for him.
I mean, there's a lot of maybe, maybe not. Is it not going on in this? And I think, honestly, I'm going to do a complete cop out and say this is a parental decision, because frankly, no two 16-year-olds are the same, and you know your 16-year-old. That being said, a week is a long time for his first time being left alone. So I would be approaching this in a compromise, because I do hear in this that this parent is saying, I'd like to, you know, show trust, that I do trust you to take care of yourself in the house, and that you could be left alone, and increased responsibility and independence and all of that. So I would be suggesting a compromise, that he spend 3 days alone in the house and 4 days with your parents, or if a family member could come and stay in the house with him for 4 days, so he feels he has that freedom to come and go in his own space. He may feel a little limited or restricted with your parents in their house. But also, you know, if you're going, okay, maybe, but actually I don't know if I can do that split, I would certainly be trying to trial leaving him 1 to 2 nights before you. A week is a long time. And
it
the
is.
Other thing,
and he may well have never spent a night by himself in the house, and, you know, freaks out a bit.
I completely agree. He might like the idea of it versus the reality of it. But the other side of that, a little bit like you were inferring, let's say, in the intro, is to be very clear about expectations and rules, because it is summertime and you would be naive not to be at least aware of the free gaff opportunity this might offer. And I do not want to be saying all teenagers are out to wreck your house, because I really don't believe that.
Oh, they never mean to.
But I mean, word of a 16-year-old having a week at home alone will spread frighteningly quickly amongst his peer group.
Yeah. Mark says, we left our 17-year-old home alone. Little did he know, we installed a camera. Suffice to say, we never did it again.
I don't even know if I want to watch that footage back.
Beware. Oh, wow. No. So anyway, that's about as much as you can say. Of course, it might depend on the kid.
It totally depends on the kid because honestly, you could be listening to this going, my 16-year-old would absolutely safeguard the house, mind themselves, and just get on with their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's why you know your 16-year-old. Even if you have that type of teenager, though, I would still be very clear about your expectations and the rules, because it's their home, but it's also your home, and you expect to return to it in the condition you leave it in.
Mm. My almost 5-year-old gets really upset every night at bedtime about me and her father dying and her grandfather dying. It's uncontrollable crying for 20 minutes. She says things like, I'd be so sad at your funeral. What will I do without you? Etc, etc. No one has died close to us recently, so I'm at a loss as to where this is coming from. Any thoughts on what to do?
This is one that comes up quite a bit, I find, you know, with parents or children this age. And it's not a surprise, because developmentally, a fear of death and a heightened awareness of death does emerge between 4 and 6 years old. And like most developmental phases, it tends to settle and pass. And some children are going to worry a lot about death, or even more than their other typically developing peers, whether or not someone has close to them has died. They're just going to have a heightened fear about it. So a trigger for it could be something as simple as the theme of death in a story. It could be something they saw in a movie, or something a classmate has said, or maybe in their news said, my grandparent has died, or whatever it might be. It could even be, and I've had this myself with someone I was working with, that seeing a graveyard and asking the question, what's that place? For the first time was enough to go, what? I never thought about that. Mind blown. Lots and lots of questions. So I would take her worries seriously, but be very much present and calm. And what I mean by that is not that you sit down and go really morose and go, yes, let's really sit and think about death a lot together. But not that we dismiss. Often as parents, and it comes from that place of wanting them to feel better, we can default into it. Don't be silly. That won't happen. You don't need to worry about that. And inadvertently dismiss what is a valid fear developmentally. differently for them. So be present and calm. Don't dismiss it. And never, ever say, no one in your family is going to die. Don't worry about it. Never say something like that, because while we might, you know, genuinely hope that to be true, we cannot make guarantees like that. I would talk to her very openly about how everything that lives will die one day, animals, plants, insects, even people, but then focus on how well and healthy everyone is now and look at all the fun we had and we went out and we did this and we did this, redirect the attention to the positive and emphasize that most people live to be a really old age. And then when she's crying, because I'm really picking up on this uncontrollable 20 minute crying, that's quite a lot every night for a young child. You do want to empathize that it would really be sad. That's a valid thing. It would be sad if someone close to us died, but you know what? We would get through that together and we would help each other. We would feel sad together and we would then slowly begin to feel better together. I'd practice gratitude daily. I'd be emphasizing all the things that we're grateful for, just to kind of, at the moment, break that cycle of thinking this little one is locked into. And give her set time. You know, yes, you have a worry and we can think and talk about this worry for this amount of time and then redirect her into something fun to do. So create a space, but don't allow it go on endlessly.
Yeah, she must have a very vivid imagination.
That's exactly what I'm thinking as well, that this has been that. And it's why some children do worry at that too much level about something like this, that she's really grappling with it. And it is such an abstract notion to try and understand.
Yeah, though she seems to understand the utter finality of it.
Which
is, you know, I mean, that's difficult for an adult.
Absolutely.
To deal with a lot of the time. I'm looking for help for my 12-year-old son. For the last 4 or 5 months, he has been pulling his hair out, mainly at the side and back of his head. Massive tufts are missing. He seems down and upset, but despite asking over and over, he won't say what's going on. The bald patches are getting bigger, and another mother from the school asked me if he was okay the other day, so it was definitely noticeable. How can I help him when he won't talk?
Okay, this one is like...
This is serious.
This is serious, absolutely. So just to kind of put a little framing on it, I mean, trichotillomania is very likely what you're talking about here, but I don't say absolutely, because for me, when I read this... We can jump into a place of going, oh, it's trichotillomania, it's anxiety disorder, deal with the worry and it'll all sort. Actually, with trichotillomania, the growing body of research that's emerging around this particular pattern is really challenging that assumption that it's always an anxiety-based disorder, and is actually redirecting us to describe it more as a body-focused repetitive disorder. And it's probably going to get renamed a hair-pulling disorder, even in diagnostic manuals.
Okay, so, and what's the first one, I suppose, be common sense. You're anxious, so you're pulling your hair out.
Exactly. Well, we even have that phrase, don't we? You know, I'm losing my mind. I feel like pulling my hair out. I'm so upset. We tend to use that phrase, and that's literally what trichotillomania is. It's a disorder that involves recurrent hair pulling. It could be from your scalp, your body, your eyebrows, but it's that recurrent impulse. But it's different to what we'd call focused hair pulling. Focused hair pulling, and lots of people practice this and never experience it as a disorder. Focused hair pulling is more that you consciously set aside time to sit down and you pull your hair out until you've reached a goal. And what I mean by that, and just to normalize it, is a focused hair pulling could be that I sit there, if anyone has long hair, and you pick out all your split ends in one part of your hair that you're holding, and that can be relaxing and you feel great, job done by the end of it. People might sit and pull grey hairs out, whatever it is. That's more focused. It's a conscious action.
Okay.
Whereas with trichotillomania, it's not. It does, however, often develop around the onset of puberty. So this boy's age is also of interest to me with this. And I, when we look at treatments and diagnosis for something like this, I would say you have to consider integrating the biology, that would be the hormones, the genetics, the neuroanatomy component to it, the psychology, which would be the emotional dysregulation, and particularly that you note he seems down and upset, but also the environment, what has been going on in terms of life events around him. Mm-hmm. And we would tend to look at it in that kind of three-strand approach and knit those variables together to arrive at a conclusion, what has caused this and what would the solution be based on that? So I would immediately be saying to you, this is going on 4 to 5 months. You are noticing what you're describing as an emotional distress, and this is now a noticeable symptom to others as well.
Yeah, which means others are saying it to them.
Completely, which could exacerbate the behavior. I would say you need to go to your GP now.
Yeah.
And you need to seek a specialist referral. Your GP may well suggest CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and they may also, you know, suggest a referral to a specialist in this area also. If not, I would seek that. And I imagine your GP may also refer you to your local CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. I would say yes to all of those. I wouldn't assume this is anxiety, but I wouldn't preclude it either. But
yeah,
bottom line here is I would like you to follow that up very quickly with a referral. Go to your GP.
If now, and as we know, the system can be clogged up in CAMHS. You can be waiting for a long time. Is there a private alternative for something? If it is trichotillomania, that there's a private place.
You could go to a registered child psychiatrist, child psychologist. Again, your GP could make that referral for you. That is an expensive alternative. I just want to say that. And if that's not an option, please also ask your GP to write on the letter that this referral is urgent.
Right. Going back to the first question we had, should the 16-year-old be left at home? Usually most questions have divided opinion to some degree or another. It's rare where it's absolutely unanimous. Don't do it. My parents used to leave myself and my sister at home all the time. When they went away, within 10 minutes, we had the whole town in the house, drinking and smoking the place down. Someone else says, the fact that the 16-year-old kicked up such a stink when asked to stay at his granny's shows he is too immature to stay home alone. That's an interesting point. Mm-hmm. Do not do this. Your world as you know it will end. All 16-year-olds revert to party monsters when given a house for a week. A week home alone, says Karen. Remind him he needs to take the bins out. Betty says thanks, but no thanks. Borick says 16-year-olds are to be parented, not trusted. It's the neighbours I feel sorry for. They'll have to pick up the pieces while these so-called parents are off on a jolly. Someone else says, my parents left me home alone when I was 16. I got my older sister to fax from her work, my school, a note saying I was ill, and I spent the week at home playing PC games. I told the folks years later and they refused to believe me. Even then.
And that's just didn't want that.
That's a relatively benign one. Another scary thought, Declan on Twitter says, a 16-year-old not old enough to be responsible for your most valuable financial asset.
That's a really good way to frame it.
Yes.
I have a little more faith in 16-year-olds than that. They're not all like that.
Right, let's take a break. More questions for after this.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at repromed.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. Next question is this. I recently got a promotion at work and my children, 5 and 7, do so many after-school activities that myself and my husband are finding it hard for us to spend time together as a family. With the new role, I have had to go into the office the odd weekend, which I feel so guilty about. We all have different meal times during the week. If I'm late coming home, I'll find myself going into and waking them up to have a little chat, which I know is bad, but I'm desperate to see them. I am worried our children will start to feel like I'm not there for them. Any advice?
Oh, so much pressure. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. The first thing I'm going to say is ditch half of those after school activities.
Yeah.
Because children do not need so many, as it's described here. And actually, at this time, it's those rare and when you can grab them family moments, that intersubjective relational piece between parent and child, that's what the priority is, not how proficient they are at piano or sports. Mm. That's all important, but pick one hobby, maybe two, but certainly no more. It should not be taking up every evening of the week with activities. Children really are overstimulated after a day of school and then a heavy evening or schedule of these activities. So really want to emphasize, cancel half of those and free up some time there immediately. The guilt is just something that every parent, I think, who works outside of home carries a bit, especially when you've got one of those roles where your time out of the house is very, very consuming. Mm. And you're trying to do this kind of for the greater good. Let's be honest, part of it is our own career ambition. There's nothing wrong with that. But also it's I'm trying to build a life for our family and this is the way that we are doing it.
Yeah.
So you've got to give yourself a break and say, look, you've made this choice to work this job or take this new role and that you did consider and think that through. So hang on to the reasons that you knew this would be a good thing, just to try and anchor yourself with the guilt. And I think as well that when it comes home, I totally get that, you know, coming home late and you want to wake them up just to talk to them. But, you know, you're dead right. You are solving one problem and creating another by doing it. I'm wondering if you could be planning ahead because you're going to know their schedule and their day-to-day occurrences so well. You could certainly use video calling so that you get that check-in time. Make sure you're asking what the best bit of their day was, what bit they'd like to change. You can leave little notes under their pillows if you're gone before they wake or if, you know, they've gone to bed. But when you get home, that you could just leave a little note under their pillow that they can find in the morning so they know you were holding them in mind and thinking about them. And then really, I mean, obviously, I'm going to talk about 15-minute parenting because that's literally what I do.
Sneaky plug there.
Someone wrote a book. But I really would look at, especially in this situation, don't be thinking that you don't have an evening together as a family. Take what you do have and make it work for you. And if that's you're saying, look, that isn't even at the moment 15 unbroken minutes, do five throughout the day. Yeah. Take these moments of meeting, as I would describe them, between you and your child and connect in a doing, not saying way. So don't get down and talking to them and talking and I feel so bad and are you okay and reassure me that I'm not a bad parent for being out of the house. Make me take a different approach and just play. Just be they're at a lovely age for it. You could do it together as a family and set aside family time at the weekends. You know, yes, you have to go to work some weekends, but there will still be enough time. And bear in mind when I say family time, I'm not talking about hyper-stimulating with a trip to the zoo and a trip to the open farm and a trip to the jump zones and the play areas. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about simply spending time together at home, pottering around, doing usual stuff.
Yeah, just being
keep
around
it simple.
Each other.
It's about the togetherness.
Yeah. My wife and I split up about 7 months ago. We were cohabiting, but I recently moved to Galway for work, and my ex and my daughter live in Dublin. I was wondering how to answer my five-year-old daughter when she asks, why are you not married anymore, and what did I do wrong? It must be so confusing for her, and she can get very upset about it. I don't think the move helped, but I can't afford to live in Dublin, and work took me to Galway. How can I make her feel secure?
I know. I mean, it's not that you can make her feel secure, but you can help her earn that sense of felt safety, which is what we talk about when we talk about security. And that's not just, you know, the kind of safety where the windows and doors are locked and I know I'm physically safe, but internally and emotionally, I have a felt safety. And that's really what children are craving. And this is a significant life event in anybody's life, adults or children. So her responses, while very difficult and triggering for the parent involved, because you're having your own emotional reaction to this too, are quite normal. So I want you to empathize and validate, you know, why are you not married anymore? Answer her. Give her an honest answer, but developmentally appropriate. You don't want to get into the actual nitty gritty of why it is you're not together anymore, but keep it simple, like mom and dad changed how we feel about each other. We feel that we're better parents as friends. We will never change how we feel about you. We love you very much. And then you go into the reinforcing all the love and you almost want to develop kind of like a little script that you can default to so she's hearing the same message in the same way. Because as a child, it is going to be incumbent on her in order to gain a deeper understanding of these very complex adult emotional decisions. She'll ask you over and over again. And this helps her to make sense of it. I think while you're away, you want to use that video calling again. I think it can be a really nice thing. But also hopefully, and you don't infer otherwise here, but you and your ex-wife are, you know, at least amicable enough to share what's going on in your daughter's life so that she knows that you are actively involved, even if you're not there, that you know that she has swimming on a Tuesday and you know she had a play date with her friend on a Friday and you know these things so that you can bring it up and she gets gotten by you. You know that she's held in mind even when you're not together. And that's how you get that place of security within this. But I would give it some time. 7 months, it might feel like a long, long time, but given you were cohabiting until recently, it may now be experienced as a fresh separation from your daughter's point of view.
Exactly.
Because even though you know you weren't together for 7 months, she may not have internalized it that way.
Yeah. And she didn't do anything wrong, the poor little
And that's
thing,
the yeah. tons of... But children, yeah. When they don't understand something, one of the best ways to try and understand it is to personalize it. Because if I did something wrong to cause this, then it stands to reason I could do something different yeah. to make it better. Aww. So they're just trying to make everyone happy. So really, it's about reassuring her, yes, that she did nothing wrong, but this was an adult decision and you are happy this way.
My son has an awful habit of picking his nose. It's like a comfort for him. He'll be watching telly and the finger pops up the nose. In the back of the car, looking out the window, and up goes the finger. In the cinema, you name it. Anytime he's not using his hands, he's picking his nose. His teachers have been complaining to him about it all year too. None of us can get him to stop. What can we do at this stage? Well, he has a hobby.
Yeah, he's busy. Because boredom and, you know, and habit forming can be part of this. But, I mean, ultimately... It might be a huge irritant to everyone around him, but it is actually harmless except for the germ factor, because dirty fingers going up noses will transfer germs up there and it could cause a sinus or, you know, it could cause some kind of infection. But usually we look at kids picking their noses because there's something in there that doesn't feel right. I mean, that's literally the first time they do
right,
it.
Okay,
there's something up there. It doesn't feel comfortable. I may not have fully grasped the nose blowing concept, so I got to go up there and...
Root it out.
Then I might go, oh yeah, that worked. And that was kind of a relief afterwards. And now I reinforce that by doing it again and again. It's also more likely to happen. And it's worth, given we're having such a miserable June, considering that if you have your home heating on, that can be very drying for nasal passageways, especially for some children. And that can cause more things to be up there, more calls to go up there.
Yeah.
So just be aware of that. I mean, we'd always kind of ensure or recommend that you ensure he's hydrated, that he washes his hands before and after, and that he can use a hanky. Again, don't assume, of course, he knows what a tissue or a hanky is.
Yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't assume it, because I would say sit with him and talk to him. The other thing is, because you want to correct it and redirect him, but without shaming him. So I would make a joke about how, you know, it's okay and it's okay at home and to do it in private, but it really grosses people out because they're like, ugh, snots or boogers or whatever you want to call them, and make a big thing about it. So there's a bit of a laugh and a levity to it. And then say to him, so because of that, we're going to have a hanky rule when you're not in your own bedroom or you're not in private.
Yeah.
So tell him where he can do it and be very clear about what he should do when he's somewhere that he can't. But redirection is your best friend here. Keep the hands busy.
Yeah, it probably is, because even when people use have a handkerchief and then just use that to effectively
sniffing
pick their nose.
Yes, yeah.
It's
not that different.
It's equally disgusting.
Redirection, yeah.
Anytime my son picked his nose, I would tell him I'd get the nose sucker out, which we used on him as a baby. I actually did it at times to make a point, and he would get embarrassed, so the picking soon stopped. He would have been 9 at the time.
That was a brave parent to use one of those on a 9-year-old.
Yeah, that's a brave parent. Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We'll take a break after that. The philosophy of clothes.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.